Those defilements that have swelled to grow in past or future or present? And the answer is, they are simply those described as arisen by having swelled to grow in. They are just that. Are those defilements that have swelled to grow in past or future or present? And the answer is, they are simply those described as arisen by having swelled to grow in. They are just that. We cannot say that they are present or they are future or they are past. But they are just those that have arisen by having swelled to grow in. Now, there are various meanings of arisen, that is to say, arisen as actually occurring and so on. So,
I know this isn't exactly said, but is this close to saying that they're empty?
No.
Okay.
Now, we will explain later, right?
Okay.
Yeah. So, then the commentator brings in four kinds of, say, what are called arisen. The Pali word is upanna. So on the sheet, I gave you the Pali word also. Four kinds of upanna, that which has arisen. Four things that are called upanna in Pali. And the word upanna means that that has arisen. Now the first is, arisen as actually occurring. That means all that is reckoned to possess the three moments of arising, aging, and dissolution. That means it is the real present things. Because when we say something is present, we mean it has, it possesses a three stages of arising, staying, and disappearing, or arising, aging, and dissolution. So this is the real present. So this real present is sometimes called upanna, that which has arisen. The next one is arisen as being and gone. That means they have arisen and now they are no more. Arisen and gone. So they are also called arisen. And there are two of them. Wholesome and unwholesome dhammas, that is cetas and cetasikas, which have experienced the stimulus of an object. That means which have tasted the object. Which have experienced the object, the taste of the object, and disappeared. So they are also called arisen, as been and gone. Now here, been means experienced. The second is also anything conditioned that has reached the three moments beginning with arising and has ceased. So something which has, something conditioned which has come into being and then disappear. So that also is called arisen. It is having been and gone. Now the third, arisen by opportunity made. Now the past karma is called arisen by opportunity made. It was really past. So although it is past, it is called arisen. That means it is still with us or something like that. Because it has stood. That is the direct translation. It has existed inhibiting the result of other karma and has made the opportunity for its own result to arise in the future. When there is karma and then it disappears, then it leaves something like potential in the continuity of beings to give results in the future. So when it made the opportunity for its result to arise in the future, then it inhibits the result of other karmas. And the second is the future result. The future result is also called upanna, although it has not yet arisen. So although it has not yet arisen, it is called arisen. Because when opportunity to arise is made, it is sure to arise in the future. When karma is, say, accumulated, I mean karma is done, then the fruit is sure to arise. So the future result can be called arisen, although it is, in fact, it has not yet arisen. The fourth arisen by having soil to grow in. This, we are concerned with this, the fourth one. So arisen by having soil to grow in, that means unwholesome karma, which has not been eradicated with respect to any given soil. Then what is soil here? Soil here means the five aggregates in the three planes of becoming, which are the object of vipassana. And what has soiled means mental defilements, which are capable of arising with respect to those aggregates. So, what the path eliminates is this kind of defilements, arisen by having soil to grow in. And here, soil means the five aggregates in these planes of becoming. They are the object of vipassana meditation. And what has soil means mental defilements, which are capable of arising with respect to those aggregates. That means, suppose I see an object, a desirable object, and I do not practice vipassana towards that object. So I take it to be beautiful. Although at that moment I may have no attachment, but since I have taken it to be beautiful, I can have attachment with regard to that thing in the future. So that kind of attachment or mental defilement is what is called, which is a soil to grow in. So with regard to objects, we have to practice vipassana meditation so that we see their true nature, so that we see that they are impermanent and so on. When we have seen that, when we have practiced vipassana towards that, then the defilements are not said to be inherent in these objects. But with regard to objects which we fail to observe by vipassana, there is always the possibility that defilements will arise with regard to those things. Those defilements which can arise through not having observed by vipassana are called the having soil to grow in. So actually, what the path eradicates is not the present mental defilements, not the past mental defilements, not the future mental defilements, but it is something like future, because some liability in our continuity, that is, when there are conditions, they can arise. So that liability is what is eradicated by the path consciousness. And such the liability is just called here the soil, having the soil to grow in. That means, in my continuity, or in my, let us say mind, in my continuity of consciousness, they can arise. So they have my continuity as a soil to grow in, because I have taken that object to be beautiful, to be permanent, to be pleasant, to be to be substantial or to be self. So since I have taken this thing to be permanent and so on, then at any time the defilement can arise. So that liability, that those defilements which can occur through not being observed with vipassana, what are called those that have soil to grow in, because it has got my continuity, my mind, say, to grow in, to arise in. and that is not meant objectively. That means the having the swayu to grow in. Having the swayu means having the swayu not as an object, but as a place to grow in, as a base. That is also important. Because if we say it is by way of taking an object that it has got the swayu, then it can mean, say, there is an arahant. He is said to be beautiful. So a man saw the arahant, and then he had sexual desires for that arahant. I mean, he wanted that arahant to be something for his wife or something like that. And so, even with regard to the body of an arahant, mental defilements can arise in other persons by taking the body of an arahant as an object. So if we mean that having the swayu means having the swayu as an object, then it will mean that an arahant can eradicate mental defilements of another person. Because that person has taken the arahant as an object, and then he has attachment arise in his mind. So having the swayu does not mean having taken as an object, but having the swayu means having got some place to grow in or to grow out of. So yeah, like the elder who had obtained, like the defilement that arose in the elder Mahatesa, well, not yet. I think page 806, right? Like those that arose in the rich man Sorya with respect to the aggregates of Mahakachana. So he had wrong desires for Mahakachana. And in the Brahmin student Nanda with respect to Oplavana. Oplavana was an arahant, a nun. And Nanda was, Nanda fell in love with her, and so one day when she came back from the sun, then he raped the nun. So having swayu means not having swayu by way of taking as an object, but by way of having a place, having a base. Because if we say the defilement which has the swayu to grow in by way of taking object, then it may mean the defilement in another person also. And nobody can eradicate, even the Buddha cannot eradicate the defilement in another person. So I can eradicate defilements in my mind and not in another person's mind. So it is to be understood this having swayu means having swayu not as an object, not as taking as an object, but having it as its location or something like that. So, and if what is called arisen by having swayu to grow in, no one could abandon the root of becoming because it would be unabandonable. That means because it belongs to another person. But arisen by having swayu should be understood subjectively with respect to the basis for them in oneself. That means they should be understood as having the place to live or to exist, something like that. For the defilements that are the root of the Ravana inherent in one's own aggregate, not fully understood by insight. So if we do not practice vipassana towards things, then we do not fully understand these objects. Fully understanding, having seen their arising and disappearing, and their characteristics, and also being able to get rid of mental defilements with regard to them. So, for the defilements that are the root of the round of inherent, that the round are inherent in one's own aggregate are not fully understood by insight from the instant those aggregates arise, and that is what should be understood as arisen by having soil to grow in the sense of its being unabandoned. So, in brief, what the path abandons or eliminates is just the mental defilements which would arise when there are conditions, which would arise because one has not seen them, seen them correctly, one has not fully understood them. So that liability is what the path consciousness eradicates, and not the real mental defilements arising at the moment. Because when there are mental defilements, there can be no path consciousness, and when there is path consciousness, there can be no mental defilements. And then, I think that if you understand this, the other passages are not difficult. So, and then the author gives another set of four kinds of upana, paragraph 89. Besides these, there are four other ways of classing arisen, namely arisen as happening, arisen with apprehension of an object, arisen through non-suppression, and arisen through non-abolition. So arisen as happening is the same as one, arisen as actually occurring. That means it is rightly in existence, possessing three moments. Now when an object has at some previous time come into focus in the eye, etc., and defilement did not arise then, but arose in full force later on simply because the object had been apprehended, that means taken firmly as permanent and so on, then that defilement is called arisen with apprehension of an object. Like the defilement that arose in the elder Mahatesa after seeing the form of a person of the opposite sex while wandering for alms in the village of Kalyani, Kalyani. So from before there was no the mental defilement in elder Mahatesa, but he saw a person of the opposite sex, and then the defilement arose in his mind, so like that. As long as the defilement is not suppressed by either serenity or insight, though it may not have actually entered the conscious continuity, it is nevertheless called arisen through non-suppression. That means it is not really arisen, but it is called arisen because it has not been suppressed, because there is no cause to prevent its arising. But even when they are suppressed by serenity or insight, they are still called arisen through non-abolition, because of the necessity for their arising has not been transcended unless they have been cut off by the path. That is, those that are not cut off or abandoned by the path consciousness, so they are called arisen through non-abolition. Now, abolition and suppression are different here. Suppression means keeping them at bay for some time, and abolition means eradicating altogether. Now, like the elder who had obtained the 8 attainments and the defilements that arose in him while he was going through the air on his hearing the sound of a woman singing with a sweet voice as she was gathering flowers in a grove of blossoming trees. So he had obtained the 8 attainments. So that means he has suppressed the mental defilements by the 8 attainments. And the defilements that arose in him while he was going through the air. But so he was going through the air, but he heard a woman singing, say, plucking flowers, and so defilements arose in him. So such defilements are called those that arisen through non-abolition. Because they are not abolished, they are not eradicated, they may arise when there are conditions. So there are these 4 kinds. And the 3 kinds, namely, arisen with apprehension of an object, arisen through non-suppression, and arisen through non-abolition, should be understood as included by 4, arisen by having soil to grow in. So the 4th of the first list corresponds to 3 of the second list. So as regards the kinds of arisen stated, the 4 kinds, namely, as actually occurring, has been and gone, by opportunity made, and has happening, cannot be abandoned by any knowledge because they cannot be eliminated by the paths. But the 4 kinds of arisen, namely by having soil to grow in, with apprehension of an object, through non-suppression and through non-abolition, can all be abandoned because a given mundane or supramundane knowledge, which it arises, when it arises, nullifies a given one of these modes of being arisen. So when we say the path abandons, then we mean the second 4. I mean, second 4 means here mentioned 1 of the first and 3 of the second list. So by having soil with apprehension of an object through non-suppression and through non-abolition. So what the path eradicates is the inherent tendencies or latent tendencies, and not the ones that have arisen in the consciousness. Because when they are in the consciousness, then we cannot eradicate them simply because they are there. That is why especially in the commentaries, it is said, anupada niroda. That means non-arising in the future is called cessation. So cessation of, say, mental defilements means non-arising of them in the future. Because mental defilements arise and then they disappear by themselves. You don't have to do anything about them. They arise and they disappear. So the cessation of mental defilements really means not letting them arise again. So non-arising in the future is what is called cessation of the mental defilements. And here also, when there is path, it has the power to render them, say, inactive or render them non-arising. Now the four functions in a single moment. It is said that the path does the 4 functions simultaneously. And what are the 4? Now at the times of penetrating to the truth, each one of the 4 path knowledge is said to exercise 4 functions in a single moment. And these are full understanding of the first noble truth, abandoning the second noble truth, realizing the third noble truth, and developing the 4th noble truth. So at one moment, the path consciousness or path knowledge exercises these 4 functions. Not one by one, but simultaneously these 4 functions are done. For this is said by the agent, just as a lamp performs, so functions, and so on. So the simile of a lamp is brought here. And then another method, 95. As the sun, when it arises, performs, so functions, and so on. So, and then another method, a boat performs four functions. So these similes are given to illustrate the four functions done by path consciousness simultaneously. And then, in paragraph 97, so when his knowledge occurs with the four functions in a single moment at the time of penetrating the four truths, then the four truths have a single penetration in the sense of trueness in 16 ways, and it is said. So there are 16 ways or 16 meanings mentioned here, four for each truth. So how is there single penetration of the four truths in the sense of trueness? There is single penetration of the four truths in the sense of trueness in 16 aspects. Suffering has the meaning of oppressing, meaning of being formed, meaning of burning or torment, and meaning of change. These are the four meanings of the first noble truth. And then the second noble truth, the four meanings of second noble truth, meaning of accumulation, meaning of source, meaning of bondage, and meaning of impediment. And the four meanings of the third is the meaning of escape, meaning of seclusion, meaning of being not formed, and meaning of deathlessness. And the meaning of the fourth noble truth is meaning of outlet, meaning of cause, meaning of seeing, and meaning of dominance. So these are called the 16 ways of the four noble truths. And paragraph 98 raises a question. Here it may be asked, since there are other meanings of suffering, etc., too, such as a disease, a tumor, and so on, why then are only four mentioned for each? Now, if you go back to chapter 20, paragraph 18, you'll find that there are 40 ways of looking at things as impermanent, and so on. So the first noble truth has more than four meanings. The meaning of disease, thank you. The meaning of a tumor, and so on. So why are they not taken, and only these four are taken? Now we answer that in this context, it is because of what is evident through seeing the other three truths in each case. Firstly, in the passage beginning here, in what is knowledge of suffering, it is the understanding, the act of understanding that arises contingent upon suffering. Knowledge of the truth is presented as having a single truth as its object individually. But in the passage beginning, because he who sees suffering sees also its origin, it is presented as accomplishing its function with respect to the other three truths simultaneously, with its making one of them its object. So sometimes it is described as seeing one each at a time. But in other passages, then the seeing is presented as occurring at the same time. I mean, seeing of four at the same time. Now, as regards these two contexts, when firstly knowledge makes each truth its object seemingly, then suffering has the characteristic of oppressing as its individual essence, and so on. In these paragraphs, we should strike out those in the square brackets. It is inserted by the translator, and it is not warranted by the sub-commentary. Now, paragraph 99,
100, 101, 102.
All
those brackets.
After likewise. Three paragraphs after likewise.
Well, not 99, just 100. Sorry about
that. But 99 also. Mm-hmm. After then. When suffering is made the object.
Well. suffering.
If suffering is made the object, then the only thing it will see is the first meaning of the suffering, and not the others. But what the author is explaining here is that when you see the second noble truth, means noble truth of origin, then the sense of being formed of the first noble truth becomes evident. So when you see the second truth, then one meaning of the first truth becomes evident. And when you see the third noble truth, another meaning of the first noble truth becomes evident. And when you see the fourth noble truth, yet another meaning of the first noble truth becomes evident. That is why these four are mentioned here. So when you see the first noble truth, then the meaning of oppression is evident. When you see the second noble truth, the meaning of being formed of the first noble truth becomes evident. When you see the third noble truth, the meaning of burning or torment of the first noble truth becomes evident. And when you see the fourth noble truth, the meaning of the first noble truth, that is of change, becomes evident. That is why these four meanings are given. So, by their own, seeing them individually, and also through seeing other truths, the meanings of the given truth becomes evident. So these paragraphs explain this meaning. So we do not need, when suffering is made the object, when cessation, origin is made the object, when cessation is made the object, when the path is made the object. And then in paragraph 99, an example is given there. As the beauties or Sundari's ugliness did to the Venerable Nanda through seeing the celestial nymphs. Now, Sundari or beauty was said to be very beautiful. She was maybe like a beauty queen. So she was very beautiful, and so Nanda was so much in love of her. But Buddha wanted to teach him a lesson. So Buddha took him to the celestial world and showed the celestial nymphs. So after seeing the celestial nymphs, he asked, who is more beautiful, Sundari or the celestial nymphs? Then he said, oh, Sundari is like a sheep monkey we saw on our way here, or something like that. So after seeing the nymphs, Sundari becomes ugly. But actually, Sundari was a beautiful woman. So here also, a cooling path removes the burning of the defilements. And so suffering sense of burning becomes evident through seeing the path. When you see the cool one, then the burning of the another thing becomes evident. Okay. I mean, that should be the end of today.